Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Get healthy, be healthy, stay healthy. It's the Power of Health with Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
So it is probably most likely almost impossible that someone today has not heard the word probiotic, well, at least over the last year or two. Whether it is an advertisement or commercial or a label on a functional food. So when you decide that it's a good idea to start getting healthy and using probiotics, and you decide to start reading labels, what should you look for? And how do you know which one is right for you? Also, today our pets have become a major part of our families. How about probiotics and pets? Is there a need? What works? What is the best? And when should we think about it? My guest today is Natasha Trenev, world-renowned expert in the field of probiotics and the founder of the American probiotic industry, as a developmental scientist whose family had been commercially producing yogurt and other cultured foods for generations. Natasha has now spent more than 40 years studying the health benefits connected to the consumption of beneficial bacteria. Help me welcome my guest, Natasha Trenev. Hey, Natasha.
Hey, good day to you, Jeffrey, and I hope it's a wonderful and glorious day.
Let's hope so. You know, I think it's really funny that anybody that I talk to today about nutrition or health, everybody has heard the word probiotic. They may not know exactly, you know, what it relates to and what the full depth of the importance of probiotics, but they have some idea that it's good for their stomach and maybe good for their digestive system. But when they go out and start getting healthy and they decide to start planning their new nutritional regime and they start looking at the labels, there's a lot of large words on these labels. And for some people, they don't mean very much. And a lot of them talk about things like strains. You know, and I think it's a little confusing, but maybe breaking it down and make it easier.
Well, yes, breaking it down and making it easier. First of all, what people need to know that the manufacturing of probiotic microbes is rocket science. It's literally like producing a spaceship. It is so complex. So the profusion of products you see in the market that are being sold under specific labels are not really manufactured by the people that are selling the products. So it becomes a daunting challenge for the consumer that's really given information in little sound bites, and they're actually being taking advantage of because the products in general don't contain what's listed on the label, and they may have a dubious potency that they're claiming for the product that they're selling to you. So this is really a wake-up call, because if we don't understand how to choose a probiotic product, which is probably the most important concept of health for the 21st century, then we're wasting our time and money. And the fact that we're trying to use probiotics to take care of symptoms without knowing what the product really contains and whether it really relates to any kind of clinical or scientific study that the so-called manufacturer is making, we're really wasting our time and money. And truly, we wouldn't do that if somebody's selling us an electronic device or a coffee. We wouldn't tolerate that. We would be outraged. But because the public is generally ignorant, and the big names of microbes listed on the label sort of pop out at them, they really don't understand what they're buying. And it's a tragedy, because my job is to educate them and make certain that when they're shelling out their hard-earned dollars, that they're actually getting what they think they're getting.
Well, there is a lot of naiveness out there, and I think there's a lot of confusion as well. But I think one question that comes in all the time, people want to know, why are there so many strains of bacteria? I mean, why are there so many different choices?
Well, first of all, that's not scientifically valid. Mm-hmm. And the reason that there's so many bacteria names put on the labels of these products, because I've been doing this for 45 years, is because the private label manufacturer has to make the products appear to be different from the various commercial entities that are buying these raw materials from them. And so the question of the consumer would be, okay, are these bacteria that listed on this label actually found in the product? And you can't know, because there's no specific potency listed for that bacteria through an expiry date on their product. So if there's no specific potency, why do you have that name of that bacteria in the product? Because that means you're letting the so-called manufacturer off the hook, because the only benefit you will get is if you know exactly what organism is in the product, at what quantity, and what purported benefit are you getting from these organisms. It's not like just throwing something up against the wall and thinking that you're going to get a supplement that's going to make a difference in your life. And, you know, the balance of the GI tract is very important to all of us. So the bacteria that are in the probiotic product that you are buying, you have to understand what they are and what quantity you need them and what area of the GI tract they're targeting to help you. That's the whole purpose of the probiotic product.
Now, you know, we've come from a time, you know, years and years ago when we were educated that, you know, probiotics were really good after you took a wide spectrum antibiotic and you had some stomach problems. And it's just amazing how they have become very much the very top of the nutritional pyramid, one of the most important things you can put in your body for overall health and digestibility and immune system and all of these different things that we have so much information on now. And I hope that people will take the extra step to make sure that they're choosing a product that works the best for them, but also doing a little homework on their own, because it's not something that you really get a lot out of if the product does not give you the capability.
Well, exactly. You know, I'm going to quote one veterinary study. And why am I quoting the veterinary study? Because in the health food industry, the organizations that existed to test these products, honestly, have disappeared. And most of the organizations testing these products get fees from the members, so they're not going to report the bad news. But this was an eye-opener. Because people in veterinary medicine and people who grow animals for profit don't want to be fooled. So out of 25 products that claim they have probiotic microorganisms that were tested, that describe the contents of the product by naming the organisms correctly and by having a valid potency for those organisms, out of the 25 tested, only two of the products tested correctly to contain the organisms that the manufacturer listed on the label. Now, that is shocking. It is probably worse for human probiotics because nobody wants bad news because, as I told you before, that virtually 99% of the products sold in the market are not made by the people selling them. So this is where I think the individual has to start thinking. Now, if you allow me a little bit of leeway here, mm-hmm. I want to do some historical
sure.
background so that people understand the importance. You know, in the 1940s, antibiotics were discovered, and they were a miracle drug, and they still are a miracle drug when they need to save your life. They're not a miracle drug when they're abused and used prophylactically for numerous reasons. And so in the 1950s, the drug makers approached the farmers of this country and wanted to sell the antibiotics prophylactically, meaning to convince the farmers to use it every day in their cattle feed to supposedly keep their animals healthier. Well, the farmers who grow these animals for profit are very vigilant and know exactly what they're spending their money on. So they told the manufacturers, hey, look, you know, I mean, it's great to keep my animal healthy, but the cost of these antibiotics are really not converting in better profitability for me. So what they found out accidentally that these antibiotics were making the cattle fatter and, you know, retain more water. So that got the farmer's attention. Wow, giving antibiotics to my, animal for resale made them gain weight more rapidly and helped to maintain water. So what? The animals are not sold for their intelligence. They're sold for their weight. And I'm being a little facetious here. I apologize. But so then that's how antibiotics became very popular. But the problem is that led to antibiotic resistance and a host of other problems, which we can probably do three shows on. And so then the people who were making beneficial microorganisms approached the farmers in the early 1960s and decided to call these organisms probiotics, or the term meaning for life, whereas antibiotics were against life. So now you understand where the term probiotic came from. And the probiotics then sold to the farmers were very specific, and the farmers gauged again the productivity of these products. And they had very strict labeling laws, and they wanted to make sure, because why? It was about business. And, you know, what really struck me in the late 1970s as a licensee of the University of Nebraska to promote the sale of their, you know, research of a single strain Lactobacillus acidophilus to the human public, it dawned on me, I said, wait a minute. If people who are selling animals for profit are spending money to give probiotics to their animals every day, why shouldn't we as human beings enjoy the same health benefits as those animals that are raised by the farmers? And that's when the light bulb went off, and I decided, you know, I was going to be the pioneer, because up to the 1980s, when I first introduced the concept of probiotics to the world, the only thing people knew about was a Lactobacillus acidophilus supplement, mm-hmm. and it usually came in a very diluted liquid state. And people were getting benefits from that, but not the kind of benefits that I knew would be had by this, you know, particular Lactobacillus acidophilus that was concentrated. So the good news, I spent about 20 years educating people until the word probiotics started to hit into the mainstream. What really brought probiotic prominence to the public, unfortunately, was the sale of what I call probiotic junk food. It was so-called putting beneficial bacteria in carbohydrate and sugar-related yogurt or kefirs or, you know, drinks or, you know, candy bars or even, God forbid, pizzas. So the whole concept of probiotic supplementation became convoluted. So then I'm stepping in and telling people, listen, you have to know what you're ingesting, at what level you're ingesting, and that the bacteria are healthy when you ingest them, and that they can survive gastric juices and bile in order to do you any good. Without that criteria, you're buying a good concept, but probably not getting any amount of value for the money that you spent.
Now, let me ask you a question. You know, people will say to me, and I've actually had people tell me, they'll say, well, I use a product that's got, you know, 10 or 11 different strains in it, and that's better. And so I'll usually, you know, people have, everybody has their opinions. Let me ask you your opinion on this. When we are looking at a product, what is the ideal way to have these things in the same bottle getting along? There's got to be a unique process that keeps them in the same bottle. And to me, that's what I want them to know.
Yeah, well, okay. Now let me, I'm getting to that, to the multiple strain. That was a way, again, for people to sell more product, because bacteria, by their nature, are antagonistic towards each other. Mm-hmm. Now, once they're inside the body, they have 27 feet of space to go to. And then, you know, if you took the small intestine and spread it on the small tennis, on a tennis court, it could stretch out on a tennis court. So the whole purpose of when you talk about bacterial diversity, it's not related to the multiple strain probiotic product by any stretch of science or the imagination. The multiple strains are put in the product to fool the unsuspecting consumer that they're actually getting the organism listed on the label and that it's actually better for them. When science tells us, A, that you that putting those bacteria in the same capsule or in the same bottle will cause intense competition, and they will start producing substances to knock each other off. And when you have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 20, or 30 strains that people are claiming in the same capsule, first of all, there's no government agency that's even testing to validate that. Number two, these organisms are antagonistic because they're in a closed-ended system inside of a capsule where they're getting no food in and they have nowhere to go, so they start attacking each other, which is the normal thing that happens in the environment. So then you're getting a product that you have no idea what it contains. The only way that I have found, based on my 45 years of background in this field, to sell the same three strains in one capsule, three different strains in one capsule, is an oil matrix. In other words, if you think about oil as being able to micro-enrobe each one of these strains and keep them separate while they're inside a capsule until they reach your mouth and they hit your stomach. The oil in our exclusive Healthy Trinity encapsulation process will protect the bacteria for over an hour at a 1.7 pH, which is quite low, if anybody remembers their chemistry. And then these bacteria are bile-resistant. Oil encapsulation is the only way that I have found in 45 years and was able to prove to government agencies to keep these bacteria separate and viable until, or viable means alive, until they reach your mouth. And then each bacteria is chosen for its action in a specific place in the GI tract, not according to what we want, but what the bacteria has shown to like as its residence once inside of your GI tract. This is what the consumer has to know. Why is this bacteria put in this product? You're claiming it's probiotic. Where is it going to live inside my gastrointestinal tract? And is it going to survive your shelf life inside that capsule to make any impact on my health? And the fact is that I've chosen three. I've chosen the Lactobacillus acidophilus for living in the small intestine, the Bifidobacteria bifidum to live in the large intestine, and the L. bulgaricus, the champion yogurt bacteria, to be the transient bacteria that goes along that 27 feet and makes sure that the product is actually, that your food is actually pre-digested and serves a vital function in absorption and, you know, creating energy for the body. So that's what your task as the consumer is, to ask the so-called manufacturer, how much of each of these bacteria do you have in this product, and what good is this bacteria going to do specifically for me, not just throwing a bunch of names on the label that many times are misspelled and you don't even know what it is, and then taking it thinking that you're doing yourself some good. It is absolutely foolish, and to me, it just, I don't get it, because the industry passed the probiotic labeling standard, and virtually everybody except Natron is ignoring it. And the consumer needs to stand up and say, enough, I want to know what I'm paying for and what it's doing for me.
So the idea of this oil enrobing process covers a lot of different benefits. Not only does it protect them once they hit the stomach, so they can go their different ways and be protected, but does it also protect them on the shelf while they're, or in the refrigerator shelf when they're waiting to be bought by a consumer? That's part of the stability too.
Yeah, it's part of the stability because it protects it from each other. You know, because the bacteria cannot interact with each other. Because remember, if anybody remembers their microbiology or science, that a bacteria are only dormant, meaning they go into total hibernation when they're kept at a minus 170 degrees Fahrenheit, which is liquid nitrogen, the same kind of storage you have for like a sperm bank. Anything above that is what we call arrested growth. So without refrigeration, that arrested growth is not very stable and can trigger growth inside the capsule where there's new food coming in and a lot of competition going on and a lot of death going on. So, you know, the fact is that we gauge every portion of the process of this product, whether it's in production, in warehousing, in shipping, and ingestion, to make sure that this very smart, living, beneficial bacteria that we call probiotics survives all of these processes to make it inside of your GI tract and actually provide you a benefit.
How did you come up with this oil enrobing process? I'm just so amazed by it. I'm so enamored by the idea of this oil enrobing process, because it, when you hear you say it, I mean, it's just kind of like, well, yeah. It just makes great sense. But I know this is not something that just happened overnight.
No, but I studied, you know, when I brought the concept from the animal field into the human field, they were, you know, like oil-based gels. Mm-hmm. And I asked, you know, the people who were selling it to the farmers. In fact, I work with what I consider some of the smartest people in the world. And, you know, there was no micro-enrobed oil-based, but there was a gel-based probiotic that was sold to animals. And I said, well, you know, again, why is the farmer demanding this efficacy? Because it's a profit, you know, it's a for-profit business. And the farmer isn't going to buy something that doesn't help him sell this animal in the marketplace. And that's where I said, I have to strive now. And it took maybe like 5 or 6 years with a lot of heartache because I couldn't put this oil, micro-enrobing process in a soft gel because there's too much moisture. Remember, what these bacteria want is any tiny amount of moisture to start growing because their directive in life is to grow rapidly and replicate itself. So they're looking for anything that can stimulate that heat, changes the atmosphere inside the capsule and will, make available moisture so that the bacteria can, grab this moisture from the environment and start replicating very quickly. So I had to make sure that we didn't have a lot of moisture. So we are the only company to this day in the world to have this revolutionary process where we take, where we micro-enrobe these three bacteria, put them in a two-piece hard gel capsule because it can work in the hard gel capsule, seal the capsule and deliver it to the person, in a, naturally colored capsule to protect the bacteria from light, and we keep it in a dark bottle, refrigerate it, so that we do everything known to science to protect the bacteria so that when they hit your mouth, they are there like in a fantastic, what I call life bubble, where these bacteria can survive, manufacturing, shelf life, and your stomach acid and bile. What's also important is that our bacteria are bile resistant, and they survive this treacherous, journey from the manufacturing plant to your mouth.
It's such a involved process, to get this end result product that all we have to do is consume. But it's just an amazing journey just getting it to the store and into the hands of the consumer.
Well, yes, and the thing that the people should be troubled by is that who is making their probiotics? We have people who come in from various countries around the world and want to tour our pharmaceutical-grade plant and want to make sure that all the products they buy are strictly from us and not from anybody else, because a lot of these people who are encapsulating probiotics and calling themselves manufacturer buy their raw material from outside the country, and where there's very little vigilance, and then they encapsulate the product and sell it to you, putting all kinds of names on the label of organisms without, having any responsibility of validating to a third party of any, what I call, stature that they actually have inside the product, what they claim on the label. This is a big problem, and as a consumer, you should be outraged, and you should be demanding to know why this organism is listed on the label, how much of that organism is in the product, and what can they expect to get of each organism when they consume the product.
So we as consumers have a little bit of our own homework to do.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. We do certainly have a lot of homework to do, because I equate this problem with what happened in the 1980s with organic certification. If any of you remember that, it was a lot of problems and a lot of claims being made, vegetables and fruits being brought in from China and called organic, found not to be organic. It was a lot of scandals. And even, I'm not going to name chains, but big chains had the scandals. The consumer was outraged. And finally, the government had to step in to regulate because there was so much misrepresentation. And even now with organic produce, and I'm a big supporter of organic produce, but people don't understand that you can still call something certified organic and use up to 7 natural pesticides, which I'm not familiar with. I'm not an expert in that, but, people should start asking, well, what are those natural pesticides that you find in organic foods, and is this something that I should be aware of? So you see, there's a lot of what I call consumer trust in thinking that, what's on the label is factual and scientifically accurate, when, in fact, you need to really know and become familiar with the manufacturer and have a real scientific evaluation of of what that manufacturer is saying and if that is valid and if you're actually getting what you're paying for when you buy the product. I think it's something we have to change in the dietary supplement and the health food industry.
Well, you know, I've seen your products delivered to stores before. They come in cold. They're in refrigerated containers, and the product themselves are cold. And it's wonderful. I mean, that's another whole step in your process as well. And then right to the refrigerator, and then hopefully into the hands of the consumer, and they get them home and get them refrigerated, and they get the benefit of your products. So very involved process.
Yeah, it is a very involved process, and the consumer should be outraged by those companies that send the products not in thermally controlled containers, coming in bubbling hot into the retailer and then ask the retailer to put the product in the refrigerator. I think that most consumers would be outraged if they knew this was happening.
We're talking with Natasha Trenev today, and we're talking about probiotics. We were talking about different kinds of processes for getting your probiotics from the factory, of course, to the labs, to you. And she was talking about her oil enrobing process, so something you might want to definitely look into. And, of course, you want to read labels, and you want to know what's on the label, and you want to make sure that there's the actual dosage of the individual products on your label. And you know what it comes down to? Asking questions. And making sure that you're asking the people that have great knowledge. And there's wonderful people out there to talk to. So I hope you'll take the time to talk to these people and definitely increase your knowledge, because it all relates to you and your health. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke. This is The Power of Health on Radio MD. For more information on this show and to download the on-demand podcast segments, visit my show page at RadioMD.com. I thank you for tuning in. Be well.